We're in the book of 1 Samuel, and we're in we'll begin chapter 20, and you know that Saul has tried to kill David. His true heart is coming through, and we've seen it now. There's no disguising it. There's no hiding it. The truth is out, and he's trying to kill David. But in the last chapter, he made a promise. He vowed, I won't do it. I vow, as the Lord lives, I will let David live. That's a promise before God. I won't kill him. Then, at the end of the chapter, he tries to kill him anyway. And David kind of gets let out and he hides. Remember his wife, Michal, she kind of puts stuff in the bed so that everybody thinks it's him and it's not. And he's down and gone out the window and out. And he's now in hiding. And he fled over to where Samuel was. And he and Samuel together went and hid. Because Saul will kill them both if he finds them. Well, David fled, chapter 20, verse 1. David fled from Naioth in Ramah. And he came and he said before Jonathan. Now he comes to Jonathan. This is a secret meeting. And he says this, what have I done? What is my iniquity? And what is my sin before your father that he is trying to kill me? He seeks my life. What did I do? David is so confused here. Some of you have said the same thing. I'm doing what God wants me to do. I'm very confused. It seems like all I'm getting is trouble. I thought I was doing what he wanted. What have I done? What did I do? He had never hurt Saul. On the contrary, he had only been a servant to the king and faithful. He had done everything that he was commanded to do. What did David ever do to Saul? As you go back and you read, you already know the answer. Nothing. Or in English, nothing. David didn't do anything. Saul has a heart problem. Jesus. What did Jesus ever do to Judas? What did he ever do? Go back and read the Gospels when you get a minute. And see, everything he did to him was good. He fed him when he was hungry. He served him. He gave him the power. When they sent the 70 out by twos, Judas was one of them, and the power was there to cast out demons, to preach the gospel, to preach the good news, to say the kingdom of heaven is at hand. What did he ever do to Judas to cause Judas to turn on him like that? Nothing. He loved him. He served him. But there was a heart problem in Judas. Whatever happens sometimes to you and me, you and I, we us, so many ways to say that. What happens? What do we really do to each other? Sometimes nothing but serve. Just do what God has said to do. So we all want to pray against heart troubles. It's a disease killing today. Someone told me one time that everyone dies of heart trouble. I said, really? They said, yes, because however you die, your heart stops and that's trouble. How do you guard your heart? Well, simply put, you begin now, because it's really going to be a waste of good energy to look back and try to fix all that. So wisdom says, it's gone. But you know what? Today, I can watch what happens to me. I can be careful. We need to confess, get rid, and then come on and go together. Don't let your heart get tricked or deceived. And the only way I know to do that is to serve other people, pray, encourage. Go to Philippians and read chapter 4 over and over and over and over. Whatsoever things are good, pure, honest, of good report, etc. There in verse 8. Think on those things. Get your mind where it belongs. Keep it from where it doesn't belong. That's a full-time job. Well, what did I ever do to him? Well, he said to him, verse 2, Jonathan replies, God forbid, perish the thought. You shall not die. Behold, my father will do nothing, great or small, but that he tells me about it. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. Jonathan says, my dad promised just a while back. He promised, he took an oath that he would not kill you. I don't know why you're saying that, David. It is not so. See, David knows something that Jonathan doesn't know. And Saul's trying to keep it sort of a secret, but it's not a secret. Jonathan says, my dad promised he wouldn't do that. By the way, you know, my dad and I are close. We talk often. We discuss things when we're sitting around the table. We talk, and if he were planning to do that, he would tell me, great or small, big things or little things, he always tells me what he's going to do. He would tell me if he's going to kill you. He's not going to kill you. And David swore, moreover, and said, your father knows certainly knows, I have found grace in your eyes. Your dad knows we are close friends. And he says, let not Jonathan know this. He's not letting you know on purpose, so you won't warn me. Your father knows that we're buddies, and so he's keeping this from you. Trust me on this, Jonathan. Let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as the Lord liveth, and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death. Jonathan, he's hiding it from you. But you got to believe me, man. There is a step between me and death. David has said something that every servant of God ought to know and never forget. David was right. There's a step between he and death. You and I live that same way. There is a step right now between death and me. One step. David made the statement here. He will realize it and live accordingly the rest of his life. Do you know who holds your next breath? Do you know there is one step right now between me and death? That's close. Well, before we go into death, let me do this so I don't miss it. I don't want to get out of order. Notice how Jonathan loves his father, Saul. My father wouldn't do that. My father wouldn't do that. If he was going to, he would tell me so. You find that written in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is what we call the love chapter. Chapter 13, verse 7, 1 Corinthians 13, 7 says this. Love bears all things. That means holds up under everything. Love believes all things. Jonathan is practicing this right here. I love my dad. I believe he's going to keep his word. He's not going to kill you. Love bears all things, holds up under, believes all things, then hopes all things, and endures all things. That's what love does. Do you want to love others as Jesus loves you? Do we want to love one another as we're commanded to? Then love first bears all things. As you're going through this life God has allowed you to have, love will help you to carry that weight, to carry that cross, to carry the load that you may carry. But love believes all things. Now, people have for years said love is blind. Love isn't blind. This love, God is love, agapeo. Love believes all things. What he's saying is, I love my dad and I believe he's going to keep his word. What if he doesn't keep his word? What if you say, I believe that person, and all of a sudden they let you down or they show you? Now, is love stupid? No. Love then at that point hopes all things. You notice that? hopes all things. That person says to me, I'm your friend. All of a sudden they turn on you and they try to stick you to the wall with a javelin. All of a sudden you now start to say, I don't believe that person is my friend, but I continue to hope for them. There is nobody I know who is beyond hope. Nobody on the earth. If they're on the earth, they are not beyond hope. Once they have shown you they don't want to walk with God, or they're not walking with God, then what you continue to do is to hope for them. And that would include prayer. And then love, while you're hoping, love endures all things. Not only does it carry, but it continues on through. And that's what Jonathan is saying. I love my dad. I know he'll keep his word. David said, you know, Jonathan, he's hiding it from you. He knows it would upset you, and he knows that you would warn me, so he's keeping it from you. But you can believe me, it's true. And there is a step, just but a step, between me and death. So now that you know we love one another, and we hope all things, and we endure all things, now you start to think how David is going to think from this moment on. There is a step, but a step, between death and I right now. Driving the freeways, there is a step between death and me. Flying the semi-friendly skies, there's but a step between death and myself. Walking down city streets, there is but a step between me and death. Even relaxing in your home, in my home, there's just a step between death and myself. I have to remember that. We aren't afraid to die, are we? Well, I have a funny thing that I like to say, and I think it's true. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Isn't that true? I don't mind dying. It's the preliminaries. You know, I just want to be there. I don't want to go through anything to get there. We need to keep in mind that it's going to be. Statistics on death right now are at 100%. You can check those. Those are solid figures. You may think that you won't, but you will. I will too. People are telling me much sooner than I think. What kind of people should you and I be, knowing that we're not finished until He says we're finished? We don't worry. It's not a fear. But we understand that. Do you realize that we'll be finished one day? David says, right now, I am in jeopardy, and there is but a step between death and myself. He's going to learn that. Well, I'll give you a little hint. For the next 10 years, he's going to live every day like that, hiding behind rocks and trees and things. What kind of people should we be? I'll tell you what kind of people we should be. Take a look at Esther. In chapter 4 of Esther, verse 16, she's going to now put her life on the line. She's going to put her life on the line to save the Jewish race. She's willing to do it, knowing that, you know, there's but a step right now between death and me. Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast for me. Don't eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in to the king, which is against the law. I'm going to go in without the king calling for me. And if I perish, I perish. I want to give my life and use it for God's glory. Well, her uncle in chapter 4 says this to her. You've got to say something. If you altogether hold your peace at this time, then shall there enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. Esther, if you don't speak up now, God's going to deliver His people. He promised, but it'll come from someplace else. But you and your father's house shall be destroyed. And Esther, who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Maybe this is why you were born. Maybe the very thing you're into right now is the reason that you were born. See, there's just but a step between me and death. Maybe the very things I'm doing now are the very reason I was born. And when I'm done, I'm finished. Job 13:15 says this. Job says, as a sick individual, very unhealthy, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. I will maintain my own ways before him. Even if God kills me, I will trust him. My life is in the hands of God. He is in complete control. Whatever happens, I will trust him, even if I die. And then Job 19:25, and I like to say this a lot. He says, I know I'm going to die. I know it's true. But this I know also, 19:25, I know that my Redeemer lives and that he shall stand at that last day upon the earth, the latter day, at the end times, on the earth. I know it's going to be true. I know there's a hope. And I wonder sometimes, do we forget what we're doing here? I do. Do you? Do you sometimes forget what it's all about when you get tangled up thinking, how am I going to pay these taxes? Where is that money going to come from? How is this going to be possible to get through this little crisis? How is it ever going to work out? We'll never come out from under this or from under that. Or this situation is going to finally take us out, crush us. What's going to happen? Have you ever been there? We have to remember, like David, like Esther, like Job. Well, like Paul, like Jesus, like John, like Peter, like James. You know what? I'm ready. I want to be used. Paul says, I am ready to be poured out. Peter says, I know the end is right now. Paul says, I'm finished. James says, hang on because it's about done. They live their lives knowing death is close at all times. Not just for believers, but for us all. You say, boy, this is pretty negative. No, it's not. It's really reality. Now look at this. How many have made complete arrangements for this life and are in the process right now of being sure that this life's going to work out? Making the right investments, making the right choices, looking for the proper insurance, looking at all the things that could be a possibility. How much effort, money, thinking, concentration, planning is done right now to completely make arrangements for this life while completely neglecting eternity? Like I'm always going to be here. But everybody knows that's not true. Are we barking up the wrong tree, metaphorically speaking, of course? Today, there's a lot of emphasis, and rightly so, on troubles that are coming. Could be economic. Could be military troubles. Could be simple violence in the major cities, the suicides, the gang warfare, the troubles. Could be just simply the fact that being in the end times, without natural affection, people have gone bizarre. Almost no emphasis is being placed on what really counts. Have you caught on to that? We need to think about these things. You don't worry about them. But we need to be prepared. I mean, let's face it. Most of you, chances are good, are wise enough to have a spare tire in your car. Why? Well, let's just be honest. It makes sense. In the wintertime, sometimes you carry a blanket, sometimes flare, sometimes... Is that a sin? Is it wise to be prepared? I think it's wise. It's logical. If you live on dirt roads that are 12 miles away from the entire earth, you make different preparations. In homes, sometimes you buy a generator because of the possibility, if you live in Idaho, the guaranteed fact that you're going to lose power. You just know it. Is it a sin to own a generator and to have food in your house? No, it's probably wise. Well, if that's wise, and you would say, yeah, I agree with that, then have you prepared for the troubles coming after you leave here? See, there's trouble coming for those who don't know Jesus. And if it's wise to have a spare tire, well, then it's got to be wise to know where you're headed when you leave. You need to make reservations. And David reminds us, there is but a step between me and death. I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm that close. True, David. Well, I want to remind you before we go on, God says, what is most important to me and to you, if you're a Christian, well, to anyone, but especially us as believers who know that there is heaven, there is hope. God says this, it's what you can't see that you ought to be concentrating on. It is what you can see that really isn't going to count. Now, is that scriptural? 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Verses 17 and 18. Paul says, our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Everything you can see has got to wind down. It has to. But the things you can't see, those are the things you need to be looking toward and then be prepared for. Keep in mind, it is not a negative. It's a positive in your life. Then Jonathan said to David, all right, David, Since you believe that you're that close to death, which obviously we all are, well then whatever your soul desires, I will do it for you. Tell me what you want me to do. I don't know how I can help, but I'm your friend. I will help you. A friend loveth, Psalms says, at all times. David said to Jonathan, behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit with the king at supper or at dinner, at food. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field 3 days. I'm supposed to be there eating with the king tomorrow at the celebration of the new moon. They would have monthly sacrifices at the beginning of the new moon. And they would celebrate. And he says, I'm not going to be there. I won't show up for 3 days till the celebration is over. If your father at all misses me, then say this, David earnestly asked leave of me that he might run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family. David would like to be with his family and as they sacrifice down there. If he says this, well, that's okay. Your servant shall have peace. We'll know everything's cool. But if he be very angry, then be sure evil is determined by him. It's not to show me, David is saying, it's to show you, Jonathan, so you'll understand what's going on. Therefore, you shall deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. Notwithstanding, if there be in me iniquity, kill me yourself. You and I are friends. We have made an agreement that we would support one another and defend one another, and that we would really love as brothers. We've made that covenant before the Lord. So if I've done something wrong, you're my friend. You kill me. If I deserve to die, then kill me now. I am willing to die if I deserve it. Didn't Paul say the same thing? If I deserve to die, I am willing to die. If you find iniquity in me. For why should you bring me to your father? If I'm a sinner and I've done something wrong, then kill me yourself. There's no need for Saul to kill me. You do it. Jonathan said, far be it from you. For I knew certainly that evil was determined by my father to come upon you. If I knew certainly that evil was determined, that my father was to come upon you, that then would not I tell you. He's saying, if I knew for sure, I'd tell you. I'm not hiding anything. Then said David to Jonathan, who shall tell me? What if your father answers you roughly? How will I know? Who will tell me? Jonathan said to David, come, let's go out to the field. They went out, both of them, to the field. Verse 12 says, Jonathan said to David, O Lord God of Israel, when I have sounded my father about tomorrow any time, or the third day, behold, if there be good toward David, I will send not unto thee and show it to thee. I'll let you know. He says, I'll find out and I'll let you know what's going on with my dad. The Lord do so and much more to Jonathan. But if it please my father to do thee evil, then I will show it to you and send you away that you may go in peace. And the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. He is telling David, I'll go and I'll find out. Whatever I find out, I will come and I will tell it to you. And I want God to go with you if you have to go. Go in peace. He's saying, I know you're going to be king. I know it. And the Lord be with you. Just like he has been with my father. I realize that you'll be taking the throne. And you shall not only, while yet I live, show me the kindness of the Lord, that I don't die, but also you shall not cut off thy kindness from my house forever. We have made an agreement. We're friends. We will keep this even after we both die. Our families will honor each other forever. Jonathan said, you take care of my family. You keep your word. I'll take care of your family. I'll keep my word. No matter what my father says, no matter what comes to pass, we have been friends and we will be friends. But also you shall not cut off the kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord has cut off the enemies of David, every one from the face of the earth. Jonathan is specifically saying, I know you're going to rule Israel. I know it's going to be you. I know when my dad dies, I won't be the one to take over the throne. I know it's going to be you. Don't forget your kindness. Don't forget we're buddies. Remember we are friends when the time comes. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord even require it at the hand of David's enemies. And Jonathan calls David to swear again. Promise me, David. Because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. They were close friends, good friends. Then Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is the new moon. Verse 18. And you shall be missed. I'm sure of it. Because the seat there at the table will be empty. When you stay 3 days, then you shall go down quickly. Come to the place where you hid yourself when the business was in hand. And you shall remain by the stone Ezel. And I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof as though I shot at a mark. I'll come out and pretend I'm practicing as though I'm shooting at a target. And I'll shoot 3 arrows. And behold, I'll send a lad or a young boy, saying, go, find the arrows. If I expressly say to the lad, behold, the arrows are on the side of thee, take them. Then you can come. If the arrows are on this side and close, that means come on in. For there is peace and no hurt, as the Lord lives. But if I say to the young man, behold, the arrows are beyond you, further out, go on. Then you go your way, for the Lord has sent you away. Easy thing. I'll come out there. I'll shoot some arrows. I'll pretend like I'm target practicing because it was very common for warriors to do that. Now, what I'll do is, if it's good news, I'll shoot the arrow short. And as the kid is going, I'll say, yeah, it's close. Come on in here. Now, the kid won't know what I'm talking about, but you will. That'll mean you come on in. You're free. If I shoot it far, I'll say to the kid, go on far. Go on. That's your cue. You got to get out of here. There's big trouble. The king's after you. It's an easy, easy plan, don't you think? And as touching the matter that you and I have spoken of, behold, the Lord be between you and me forever. And as our agreement, our covenant, our friendship, our promises to one another, God knows what they are, and we'll keep them forever. The Lord be between us. So David hid himself in the field, and when the new moon was come, the king sat him down, just like he would at the table, to eat. And the king sat upon his seat, and as at other times, verse 25, even upon a seat by the wall. And Jonathan arose, and Abner, and sat by Saul's side, and David's place was empty. Nevertheless, verse 26, Saul spoke nothing that day. He didn't say anything because he thought something had befallen him. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean. Saul thought, well, David's not here because he must have been out on some assignment or doing something, and now he's unclean and he has to do a cleansing process before he can come before the Lord for this sacrifice. And it came to pass on the next day, on the morrow, which was the second day of the month, that David's place was empty still. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, I'll come, or wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to eat yesterday or today? Where's David? Where's the son of Jesse? How come he's not here? Jonathan said, answered Saul and said, David earnestly asked leave of me that he could go to Bethlehem. And he said, let me go, I pray thee, for our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother, he hath commanded me to be there. Now, if I have found favor in your eyes, let me go away, I pray you, and see my brethren. Therefore, he came not to the king's table. Well, Dad, see, he wanted to head on home. He asked permission. I told him, yeah, you don't have to be at dinner. Then Saul's anger was kindled against who? Jonathan. Remember, when you're trying to deal with a heart problem, it's not the people around you. It's not Jonathan. It's not David. The problem doesn't lie there. The problem lies in the heart of Saul. And so he is instantly angry against Jonathan. And he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman. Now, I'm not going to use the language, but what he just told him was, you don't have a dad. Your mother was a wild woman, and who knows who your father is. So he's being a little bit rude. Do not I know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own confusion? I know that he's your friend, and I know why you're doing this. And unto the confusion of your mother's nakedness. That is a suggestion that some sexual problems may have gone on between him and his mother. See, Saul is just angry, isn't he? He's saying some strange things. He is gone off. He's like us. When all of a sudden you're so angry, who knows what's coming out? I'm sick, Grandma, and God only knows what's going to come out of there. That's why you want to be sure that your heart is filled with the right things. So that when you do explode, well, the way it was put to me one time is you take a glass and you fill it full from a spittoon. It's kind of gross. And then when you shake it, what gets all over your hand? It's filled to the brim and you just shake it. What gets all over your hand? Yeah, it's pretty sick. Now, if you take a glass filled to the brim, I mean, you can't even move it. It's so filled to the brim with pure water and you shake it. What happens? Just get clean water all over your hands. Not a big problem, is it? And every one of you is filled with something. Every one of us, we are filled with something. And you'll notice that during the day, during the week, during the years, you get shaken quite often. What spills over on the people? What you want to make sure spills over is just fresh, pure water. Living water. Filled with the Holy Spirit. The things that are pure. The things that are honest. The things that are good. The things that are from above. That's why our minds need to be there. That's why you want to be careful what goes in and guard your heart. That's what he's told. So Saul is just spouting garbage here. As long as the son of Jesse, verse 31, lives upon the ground, you shall not be established, nor your kingdom. Jonathan, don't you know that David will be king if we don't kill him? Don't you know you will never get to take my place on the throne as long as David lives? Wherefore, now send and fetch him to me, for he shall surely die. Go get him. I want to kill him. Make sure you become king, Jonathan. And Jonathan answered his father, verse 32 says, wherefore shall he be slain? What has he done? Why do you want to kill him? Tell me what he did. He's trying to reason with this man, and it's not working. And Saul cast a javelin at him to kill him. He threw this javelin at his son. He has lost it. His heart is so bitter, so hateful, so angry, so filled with confusion, he is not sane almost any longer. And have you been around someone who is so bitter, so hateful, so everything? They'll kill whatever gets in their way. Everybody's out to get me. I got to get them first. I've got to say, what's happening? There's no love there. There's no peace there. There's no joy there. There's hate. There's revenge. There's whatever is all in there. It doesn't belong in the life of a Christian. It doesn't belong in the heart of Saul. Shouldn't be there. We're told ourselves to guard our hearts. Don't allow a root of bitterness, a bitterness at all, to take root, because it's got to then be torn out. That's painful. We go through painful things quite often, don't we? Humble yourselves and allow God to work those things, even sometimes when it's painful, that your heart may be free to worship and to praise and to serve Him. So that when you do get shaken, living water spills all over the people that are around you. That's the prayer that we should be praying for ourselves. A lot of times it's not that way, but it's what it ought to be. Saul throws a javelin at him to kill him, whereby then Jonathan knew, that it was determined of his father to slay David. Jonathan finally could see it with his own eyes. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger, didn't eat the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had done him shame. He was ashamed of the way his dad was talking and acting, and he left and he refused to eat the rest of the feast and celebration. And it came to pass in the morning, Jonathan went out to the field at the time appointed with David, and a little lad was with him. Remember, he promised? And he said to the lad, "Run, find out now the arrows which I shoot." And as the lad ran, he shot an arrow beyond him, way out. And when the lad was come to the place of the arrow which Jonathan shot, Jonathan cried after the young man and said, "The arrow's way out there. Go on. It's beyond you. Go on." And Jonathan cried after the lad, "Make speed, hurry, don't stay." Now the little boy thinks, "Well, boy, he really wants me to hurry. I better get going." But what is Jonathan doing? Those are cues. Those are all to David. Get out of here. Go now. Don't stay. Man, you're in trouble. You were right, David. The lad didn't know anything. Only Jonathan and David knew what was really going on. Jonathan then gave his artillery, that would be the arrows and the bow, to the young fella, said to him, "Go ahead and carry these back to town and to the city." And as soon as the young man was gone, David got up out of the place toward the south, fell on his face to the ground, bowed himself three times. They gave each other a kiss, the same language when Joseph finally revealed himself to his brothers, that he gave them a kiss. Just, it was a friendship. One another, and they wept with one another until David exceeded. David was just brokenhearted. He wailed. And Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for as much as we have sworn, both of us, in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord be between me and you, and between my seed and your seed forever.'" He arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. David hasn't done anything wrong. The problem is in the heart of another individual. But David now has to leave. Jonathan and David will see each other one more time, very, very briefly. It'll just be real quick, "How you doing?" Give each other a hug. And they'll talk for just minutes. And David will never see Jonathan again as long as he lives. And they are close friends forever. And when Jonathan dies, it is true, and we'll see it coming up. Jonathan has a son, and his son is hurt at a young age and is paralyzed and can't walk. And David will take that young man in to sit right at the king's table. Who for? Because he felt sorry for the little guy because he couldn't walk? No. Because he did it for Jonathan and his promise. And I think sometimes as we close, God made a promise. Jesus God the Son and God the Father. And God promised. And you know, He comes and He gets you and I, and He brings us to His table. Why? Because He promised, Jesus. He promised. And He'll keep His word. And He will keep His word forever to those who belong. David is now going to run away. And I've told you before, just briefly, understand, he's going to run now for a minimum of 10 years. It's going to be a difficult life for David. Now, he doesn't know that, but you and I do. How could God love you and say that you're king and you're a man after my own heart and then let you suffer so tremendously so as to fear for your own safety for years and years? People say, how can a good God, if God is love, how can He allow some of the things that go on? And you say, you know what? God is building up, strengthening. He is working a work in our lives for His glory. Sometimes it's easy and it's really a lot of fun. Sometimes it's a little more difficult and it does bring on some tears. Blessed is the man who, walking through the valley of Baca, maketh it a well, and maketh it a spring, the Bible says. Valley of Baca is what? The valley of weeping, wailing, tears. Those tears come out on the other side to be a spring of life for others. You're not forgotten by God. He loves you. And we've all seen that David will be king. And his education was a good education. And he became a good king. Yet, some of his education was tough. Just as yours and mine have been. But he still loves you. And he is still working. And he still can do anything. And you need to remember to call out to him. And understand that it's a heart problem here, not of Jonathan, not of David, but of Saul. So what you and I say is, Lord, don't let my heart go that direction. It could go that direction, but I'm asking you, don't allow my heart to go that way. Let my heart be a heart after yours. And He'll hear you, and He'll answer, and you'll see. So don't give up. Trust Him. And listen to Him. Read your Bible, pray, trust Him. Let's bow our heads.